You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Football Fanalytics podcast in association with 23. This is the show that combines our love of football and very average Sunday league playing experiences with our knowledge of football statistics and data analytics. It's episode 35 and we're discussing spot kicks this week. My name is Mark Carey and fresh after seeing him for a pint recently, for the first time in a very long time, I am joined, of course, by Ryan Bailey. Ryan, how are you doing?
Well, all the better for a pint with you, Mark, obviously. But it was a bit odd, wasn't it, seeing each other in person? It sort of took me back a little bit, not seeing a little rectangle of your face on FaceTime.
I know, and it felt like we needed to make the most of the time that we saw and actually record an episode in the same room. But alas, we didn't. We obviously tried to spend it more in a more fun situation, obviously having a pint.
And we are back on FaceTime.
We are back to FaceTime recording. But yeah, how are you, mate? You well?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm pretty psyched, actually. Obviously, pints with you was good. I'm still riding high, to be honest, off the episode with Chris Sutton. We obviously haven't released an episode last week, but still sort of just having nice comments and feedback about it, really, aren't we? It's been really nice, the sort of reception that listeners have had to us talking to Chris Sutton. So yeah, thank you for nice comments. It went down well, didn't it?
Absolutely did, yeah. Thank you again, as you say, to all of the listeners for their kind feedback. Thank you again to Chris, of course, for his time, and he also retweeted it and shared it, which was great to try and, you know, expand us as a podcast to more people. So we're back to the the daily grind, really, but back to just me and you this episode. No guests, unfortunately. But
well, don't put it down, mate. I'm excited about today's episode. Like you mentioned in the intro, it's a fun topic today. We're going to be talking about penalties, right?
True, yeah, no, don't get me wrong, I am really excited for this one, and I genuinely am, because I remember texting you about it to say that, you know, I've got this idea of, obviously, penalties, there's so much we can cover with penalties, but also trying to, I mean, I'm going to threaten to say it now, but maybe look to explain statistically the best place to put your penalty. Ooh. By the end of this episode, we're going to try and see if we can answer that question, but yeah, a fun one. There's so much you can unpack with penalties, so where do you want to start?
Well, I think it'd be weird to not start with me asking you a very important question. Say you, Mark Carey, are stepping up for England in the World Cup final for the fifth penalty in a penalty shootout. If you score, we win the World Cup. It's all brilliant. You're a hero. Where in that rectangular goal that you're looking at are you going to place the ball? How are you going to approach it? Are you going power? Are you going low, high? Big moment. How does Mark Carey take his World Cup winning penalty?
It's funny. Before I actually answer, I've been doing obviously a bit of research ahead of this episode, and I saw a study about penalty shootouts, and it was really interesting. I'm gonna go straight into the hard cold facts here. I've not even got going. That sort of statistically, as each penalty kind of went by, so the difference between the first penalty in a penalty shootout and the fifth one, the success rate, as you would imagine, but obviously for increased pressure and all the other things that go with it, the fifth one, the success of the fifth one, was far lower than the first one, which I found interesting in itself, probably because of the pressure.
Right.
So when the pressure's on me, fifth penalty taker, I'm stepping up, I would... I haven't given this actually that much thought. What I would do is probably what I've done as a kid, which was my only way of kind of practicing penalties, was that I'd sort of go really straight. I'd address it really straight. I'd just take a few yards back from, yeah, coming directly back.
Right, okay.
And I'd step
up. How many steps?
I don't know. Let's say.
Four steps. Okay, four steps.
Four steps, but I'd take
all
no angle.
Details, Mark.
True. I'd take no angle on the sort of the step up, if that makes sense. So the kind of giving nothing away as to whether I'm going left or right. I'd come square away from it. I'd sort of run at it quite quickly, but I'd open my body up at the last minute and try and kind of go to my right. So obviously I'm right footed, so going to
your
my right,
right keeper's
the keeper's left.
Yeah.
And it would probably go quite high the way that I do it. And the aim was to try and get it kind of quite high and almost heading for the side netting.
Right.
It's probably a high risk, high reward. I was never that good at it, but it's what you'd practice in the park.
Well, I guess you're trying to just give the keeper absolutely nothing in the way of know which way you're going to go, because you could equally try and sort of drag it, couldn't you, or stick your laces through it and go left. So interesting. Slightly, I mean, is that quite hard as a 10-year-old Mark Carey? Was it quite hard to run straight and then... You've then got to kind of twist and lean back a bit almost, haven't you, to be able to get round it in that? Because obviously the natural thing would be to be run from the left slightly and then sort of just go straight through it on the right. So yeah, no, it's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, no, I try and probably do it so that I don't know, the idea being that you give nothing away. I mean, we'll come on to it of just how much it is a game of double bluff.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
You know, versus the keeper versus the penalty taker, of just the psychology behind it. But I try and, as a kid, think of the way to not give anything away. But anyway, that would be mine. Have you got one in mind yourself?
Well, to be honest, my approach would be avoid it at all costs, is the honest answer. if I'm being brutally honest. I've never taken a competitive penalty in a game before. I think that's genuinely true. I don't think I ever did.
Can't handle the pressure.
But also I think there's always been people who've been better at it, so I never got asked. But also I just think that it's just such a pressured situation, isn't it? And I think that I've never been a prolific goal scorer. But if you're sticking me in the World Cup final and, you know, six other people got injured, so I literally had to take the fifth penalty. I think I would have to go with an old-fashioned school of thought, which I don't do very often when it comes to football, but I think I would just put my laces through it and try and whack it as hard as I could.
You just absolutely web it.
Well, I think you can be forgiven for trying to stick your foot through it and it not coming off. I think if I tried to do anything remotely clever and missed in that moment, I think the option would just have to be blindly hope that I get it on target with a bit of power. But you know, I'm sure we'll come to the what is the best actual way to try and take a penalty in those sort of moments. But yeah, there's no rhyme or reason. Probably go keeper's right, because it's just a bit easier to wrap your foot around, isn't it? And you know, yeah, as you can tell,
really relaxed about this.
If anyone's touting me up as a penalty taker for their football team next season, don't. So yeah, that's my answer. Yeah.
You can offer in other ways, but just not penalty taking. All right, fine. Well, I'm already thinking of ways why your technique might not be the most optimal one.
You tease.
Yeah, I know, I'm teasing of all the content for today's episode. But on that note, should we crack on with the main bit?
I think we absolutely should.
So, penalties, as we say, and let's unpack it a little bit more closely. And I think hopefully you'd agree, Ryan, I think it's just such a unique part of the game, and if you'll excuse the pun, it very much is just a straight shootout between goalkeeper and obviously the penalty taker, which is unlike any other sort of situation on a football field. It's a strange one. I don't know, would you agree that it's the most lucrative opportunity almost that you have to score, that you can control? Obviously in open play you can obviously get it a lot closer to the goal, but would you say it's the most lucrative opportunity, and that are we giving, I guess we're giving the advantage to the penalty taker over the goalkeeper in relation to penalties?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, it's a bit like batting and bowling in cricket, isn't it? Or baseball or something. It's the only situation in football that you have. I mean, I know you have one-on-one sometimes when a striker is running through, but an actual set moment where you're kind of psyching each other out and
you've got
and
time to do
you've
that.
You've got time to think about it and decide what you're going to do in a non-live situation. it's the only situation within the game that's like that, which is obviously why, you know, it's so fantastic for so many reasons. I absolutely do think that the advantage is with the taker. I think I'd be right in saying you're never really annoyed at a keeper if they concede a penalty, are you? You're not. You don't really ever think, oh, I can't believe they let that in. But if a taker misses their opportunity, it's very much if they go wide or if they get it saved because of a feeble effort or something, you're very much straight away thinking they should have scored that. So yeah, I absolutely think that it is in the taker's hands. Because they've got so many more options as well, haven't they? They're in control of what they are going to do. The keeper has to just be reactive, really. There's only so much a keeper can do. But also, I don't actually know the XG value, getting to the...
Always comes back to expected goals.
Yeah, put a bit of analytics seasoning on there. I don't actually know what the XG value is for a penalty kick, which I'm sure you've told me before in episodes. Apologies in advance. But I'm guessing it's very high. I'm sure you can tell me what that is, but I would imagine it sort of backs up the thought that, you know, the advantage is with the taker.
Yeah, no, absolutely does. And I suppose, as with anything, it depends on the model that's used and obviously the data provider and things like that. But on average, the XG for a penalty is, I think specifically, I've been told that it was 0.76, but in the region of, not, you know, 0.75, that there or thereabouts. So 3 out of 4 penalties essentially are scored. So as you say, yeah, the advantage very much with the penalty taker. They are more likely to score than not. But it is an interesting one. Do you know what, actually, in an episode gone by, we spoke about unpopular opinions, and I've been thinking about this ahead of this episode. I don't know whether you agree, but because the advantage is so with the penalty taker, would it not be, because obviously the goalkeeper has to stay on their line, so they have to be very reactive, as you say, they're very limited in what they can do, and it goes against what they would normally be able to do. What do you think to this for an unpopular opinion, that the penalty taker, the minute they take their first step, the keeper can like charge them down, they can come off their line.
Oh, okay, that's an interesting point.
I don't know, what do you think? Like, would it almost tip the scales a little bit so that it might then inform... you know, then the penalty taker has to take a step back. That's, excuse the pun, but has to then think about it a little bit and be like, okay, because you could really have a 10-yard run up and absolutely blast it, and you know the keeper's just got to wait on their line.
Yeah.
Versus if you then have to think about, you know, fewer steps taken, you've got to think about power placement, and the keeper can just charge you down and almost treat it as a one-on-one situation.
That's really interesting. Really interesting. Yeah. I totally see what you mean, because I think it's unfair. The keeper is rooted to the spot. Yeah. Just from an agility point of view and been sort of stuck. Yeah. It's hard enough anyway, isn't it? If someone's running up at full pace to absolutely leather it as hard as they can into the corner. I mean, I think I read somewhere that the average penalty or something around these lines is about half a second, you know, the ball from travelling from the spot into the goal.
Right.
The keeper's got half a second really to get across, which is nothing, is it?
Yeah.
So it's hard enough anyway if they're absolutely rooted, flat-footed on their line. Whereas, as you say, the advantage, even just from a laws point of view, is with the taker, who can come at it from whatever angle they want, take as big a run-up as they want. But if you were to Arsene Wenger style try and introduce a new rule regarding this, if they could, as soon as the taker steps off their, you know, off their mark, if the keeper could run out and just like charge it down, like, you know, in rugby when they take a conversion, the people could run with their arms up to block it. Like, I don't know what kind of penalties we'd then be seeing. But yeah, it'd be interesting. What would you do? Because then the keeper would massively close down the angle, wouldn't they?
Yeah, exactly. But that's what I mean. Then it will make the XG value go down, but then it brings a little bit more of a bit more kind of doubt to whether it's actually going to go in. It might be a bit premature to suggest that, but I don't know. It just could be something that's a little bit more exciting, because I just think it is unnatural. As you say, they've got to stay on their line, and they're basically just got a shot more often than not blasted at them.
Well, all they can do is kind of just stand there, and their only weapon really is to psych them out, isn't it? And to stare and to, you know, try and sort of put them off by giving them evils or something in a large group. That's the only advantage they really have.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, you talk about Sunday league and stuff, like, it is pretty much down to the psychology of it and who's going to blink first and responding in that way. I suppose the higher up you go, and it's not even going really high, that you can do some level of analysis. I mean, you know, obviously this podcast is about analytics, but just simple video analysis to know that, you know, you're coming up against this team. Who's their penalty taker? Where is their five most recent penalties gone? Have they gone to the left, right? Do they rotate between left and right every other penalty? Whatever it might be. I almost feel that there's, not that there's no excuse for goalkeepers now, but they do have this ability now to be able to do that. And don't get me wrong, a lot of them do. And that's, you know, it evens things out a little bit, and the goalkeeping coaches will feed the information to them, and they'll work on that in the week. It's not suggesting that they don't, but in years gone by, you might not have had access to that, talking decades ago, whereas, you know, even in the context of video,
yeah,
you can easily do that.
But even, so here's the point though. So if I knew, so you're the goalkeeper, and you know, when you play me at the weekend, if we get a penalty, I'm going to be the designated penalty taker. So I know that you've done your homework, and I know that you might know that I've taken... You don't know they know, they know we know.
I know.
It's a bit of that, isn't it? But I know that you have seen that I potentially have gone 4 times out of 5 to the left. So I might be even thinking, well, okay, maybe they're expecting me to go left and they're going to dive, so I'm going to go right. It's still within my control, isn't it, and my power to decide what I'm going to do. So as much research as you as the goalkeeper can do, I still think it's a disadvantage because I can be calling bluffs right, left and centre and seeing what happens, really.
Yeah, but then I counter that by saying that then that the penalty taker can then get in their own head for the same reason that you said, that then they doubt themselves to second guess what the keeper then thinks they're going to do. And they might do something that is unnatural. I know that, you know, footballers are a creature of habit often, that they might be like, well, now I've got to go against what I'd normally do simply because the goalkeeper might know. So it's just, I just think it is a game of psychology. And it's a really interesting one at that. It's quite pure in that respect, where there's just not the speed of the game. It's, you know, penalties to a greater or lesser extent are the same now as they were 50 years ago. It's a ball on a spot. It's a keeper versus a penalty taker. There's nothing's changed in that regard. But then there's new techniques that have changed, obviously. That's where things are different. You're seeing new things all the time. Maybe my idea might be another thing that could then lead to new techniques of, you know, the keepers coming out. But I think there's, yeah, the trying to get an edge however way you can by, you know, we see it with Jorginho with his hop, skip and a jump. I don't know whether he or Bruno Fernandes did it first, but that's fairly new thing.
The one Jorginho took against Kasper Schmeichel again when they played Leicester last week or whenever it was so casual, wasn't it? Because you could see that Kasper Schmeichel was literally waiting as long as he physically could. But when Jorginho got, you know, painfully slow run but got closer, Schmeichel has to do one thing. He broke first. Well, I don't know, but he broke first, didn't he? He was the one. And he literally went half a step to his right and Jorginho put it to his left. And he just rolled it in, didn't he? It's quite genius when it comes off. I mean, it looks awful, doesn't it, when they do the skip and then they pass it straight out the keeper or something. That's never a good look. But, I do know what you mean. So what would you do as the keeper, though? Do you still think they just wait and see?
I don't know. If I recall, I think one that Jorginho's missed a couple, two, maybe three. I think one of them was against Liverpool, where you do just literally wait. It's difficult because it is a game of bluff again, but if you just really, really wait until the last minute and you know that as he's jumping, you still don't move, then he then has to hit it as he lands down after the jump. And then he's got the control. But if you don't give him that control and you still stay still as he's jumping for these sorts of techniques, I'm sure more and more keepers will start to counter it. I was really surprised by that Kasper Schmeichel one because I thought he knows what's going to happen. We all know what's going to happen. Yet still it works, which I suppose is why it's such a great penalty technique, because no matter how much you know what's going to happen, it still does work. And it's only the slightest movement, isn't it, from the keeper, because they obviously need to push off to go left or right.
And once they've gone one way, they it's just so hard to get back, isn't it, the other way. So, yeah.
You say that, though, but one of the best penalty takers to have graced the Premier League, Matt Le Tissier, I think he only ever missed one penalty. And I was reading something recently about him missing that one penalty. And it was from the keeper kind of double bluffing him or second guessing him, I suppose, where he said that normally he will just, as he's about to strike it, he just has a little look up to see where the keeper's going, where they're going to push off, where they're leaning, all these small, small gains. I suppose from the keeper's perspective, it's very much the same of, you know, where the player might be looking in the goal or where their body shape is and stuff, and trying to just work out based on really small details where each one might go. And he said that it was the goalkeeper, Mark Crossley, that he went I think he double bluffed him. He went to go to his left. So Letizia thought, okay, well, I'm going to go to the keeper's right. Yeah. And then I think he checked back very quickly, knowing full well that
right.
he'd already made his decision to do the opposite, if that makes sense. And he called his bluff, and that was the only time that he missed. So things like that, you know, you just think you've got to try and call their bluff in some way, put them off, do a, you know, a Bruce Grobbelaar is the famous example, obviously, yeah, against yeah. Roma, spaghetti legs and Jersey Dudek yeah. messing around. You've got to do something to try and get in the penalty taker's head, because the advantage is with them, as we spoke about.
Absolutely. So here's a question. I'm going to, again, put you in the frame of mind of it's Mark Carey in the World Cup final. This time, though, you're the goalkeeper. Surely the worst type of penalty for a goalkeeper, in my opinion, which is what I'm going to ask you, but is to face one of absolute power. You know, like, you know when Harry Kane takes a penalty, he just absolutely takes the skin off it, doesn't he? And he completely leathers it every single time. In my mind, even though I can try and be as prepared as possible, if someone's hitting it with that much pace, that accurately, that powerful, that I think that's the worst thing I would like to face. If you're the goalkeeper, what do you think is the worst type of penalty to try and be up against?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think it's tough. I wouldn't want to save any of them, to be honest. I certainly wouldn't want to save one that's blasted. I suppose with Harry Kane's one, he blasts it, but he does still have a real element of control, and that's because he's obviously yeah. an elite striker, an elite striker of the ball as well as that. So there's that element to it. But when you're saying about kind of blasting it, I think that's an interesting one, and that kind of brings me on to, I was waiting to say it before when you said you would just blast it if you had the opportunity
yeah, yeah.
to just put your laces through it, almost as if you're saying that you've got no worry about the control over the ball. You're just trying to get it on target, keep your head down, and just make sure it goes in, sort of thing. And it's an interesting one, because a piece of research that I was looking up before this episode was they did a piece of research which looked at 130 penalties across the World Cup and the Champions League in recent years. And they basically explained, as you would imagine, it makes sense that there's this trade-off between the likelihood of scoring and yeah. the power of the shot. So it's almost like if you get it right and you blast it, then it's got a high probability of going in. But you've then got more likelihood of it missing the target altogether because you're lacking that control.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas if you are kind of placing it, you're more likely to get it on target because you've got that control over it. But then you've probably then got a higher likelihood of it being saved. So, for example, they said that if you hit the power of the shot at 100% at your maximum, okay, you've got a 63% chance of scoring, which is okay. pretty high.
Yeah, yeah.
But you've also got a 31% chance of missing the target altogether. Now, if you were to do it at half power almost, you've actually got less chance of scoring because the keeper can obviously guess right and maybe has a bit more time to be able to get across. You've only got a 47% chance of scoring, but as I say, that likelihood of it being saved actually goes
yeah.
up to 53%.
Yeah, so okay,
I'm just saying there's the trade-off between, you know, control, placement, again, and all of this getting in your own head as well, just to be like, am I going to just web it and then hope that it does go in the top corner? But then, you know, as you and I know, it doesn't always go to plan like that. So you've got to maybe strike it.
Well, maybe it's a question then more of what's the worst way to miss? Because, you know, if I'm guaranteed to get it on target with my 50% strike, but it's going to be a little bit timid, you know, can I be forgiven more for trying to absolutely blast it and stick it in the top corner with power, knowing that I'm, you know, desperately trying to score? Will the fans forgive me if I miss it by trying to do that? I mean, surely the worst way to miss, as we've seen a couple of times this season, is if you try and go for the Panenka and you, I mean, for listeners who, I'm sure everyone knows what a Panenka is, but when they run up to the ball and then they try and just softly dink it through the middle. We saw one with Aguero this season and Lookman of Fulham. Both times they tried to be cheeky and Panenka it. Both times it just sort of fell into the keeper's arms. I think even, was it Mendy, I think went one way first, and then yeah. it was so, against Aguero, that the shot was so weak, he actually managed to come back and just put a hand out and stop it. So surely that's way more embarrassing, even though he got it on target, you know?
Yeah, and it's something I do want to come on to in a bit in terms of that decision-making as well, which informs that, where from a keeper's perspective as well, you don't want to, I think I'm kind of answering your question here, but you don't want to do nothing by staying still. So you'll often, the keeper will often go to their left or their right because they want yeah. to be shown to trying to save it. Whereas they obviously start in the middle, and if they stay in the middle and it's slotted in the bottom left-hand corner, then they look a bit of an idiot then as well.
Yeah, so, they haven't moved, yeah.
So then, yeah, but then you got to save the Panenka by staying still, unless it is painfully slow that you can go to your left, get up, probably chest it down and then catch it, as we saw fairly recently, or similar. So from the keeper's perspective, you want to like dive for it. But as you say, from the taker's perspective, it can look really bad. And you would almost, as you say, you'd rather miss with a bit of dignity rather than miss knowing full well that you could have done a bit better.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Then when they come off,
Panenkas
are the best, aren't they?
When they come off, it absolutely pains me to say it, but I think my favourite ever penalty that I've seen, which is bizarre because it's against England, it was the one Andre Pirlo took at Euro 2012 that knocked us out. And he was the coolest man ever when he ran up to take this penalty. And he just caressed the ball, didn't he? And it was the softest dink and Panenka, but it was perfectly weighted, perfect height. And Joe Hart just had absolutely no idea it was coming. Nothing in his body shape gave it away. And it was cool as you like, wasn't it, Dan? Do you remember it, that one?
I do, yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, I remember he absolutely just bossed the whole game. So he probably had that that confidence. I mean, he's the coolest man on the planet anyway.
To do it on that occasion, though, Mark, that's what got me. You know, there's one thing Aguero trying it when they've, you know, pretty much got the league wrapped up. And, you know, they've got a couple of games to get 1 point or something. But to do it in a knockout situation when you're already 2-2 on penalties or something. I think they were 2-2 because it was Ashley Cole and Ashley Young, or I think, who missed the ones after. So to just to have the audacity to do it on that at that level, I think was makes it my favourite penalty.
That's
ever.
True, actually. Yeah, all things coming together, it being in a major tournament, a knockout, the actual technique itself, all come together. Yeah, pains me to say it as well, but it's got to be up there, isn't it? It's the best one.
Well, but when you, as you say, when they come off, they're pretty spectacular. Have you got a favourite penalty, by the way, just as a pause?
Well, I ahead of this episode, obviously, you start to think about it, and one that stuck in my mind, and I had to actually Google the name of the person because it is fairly niche, but it just stuck in my mind from when I was younger. It's, I think it was from 2010, and this makes me sound like a proper, like, purist here, but it was a Spanish under-19s game.
Oh, so niche.
And it's, but people probably will recognize it because it kind of did the rounds at the time, but it's from someone, and you're going to have to forgive me for my phrasing here, but Ezequiel Calvente is
Sounds
the name
good.
Of the person, and that's my best attempt at that Spanish name. And he basically, it was as though he was right-footed, just took a bit of a left angle to, as though he was going to hit it with his right foot. And Thierry Henry was sort of great at this as well, where he goes to kick it and then basically he kicks it with his other foot. So he goes to as though he's going to kick it with his right foot. And just before he does, he sort of stubs it with his left foot. And the keeper obviously doesn't know what to do because he hasn't actually seen him swing his right foot to take the kick. And everyone just kind of stops and just think, well, what's happened? Well, surely... And the natural response is, surely this has to be taken again because it wasn't conventional as a penalty.
Yeah.
Of course, it was just that he just fooled everyone. He just, toe-poked it with his left before even swinging his right, and it was in the back of the net. And another example of a penalty where if they come off, that's great. But if he just, you know, if he were to have toe-poked it and it would have gone straight into the keeper's hands.
It would have looked horrendous.
Horrendous. He would have looked an absolute idiot as well. So it's the confidence, the audacity. I'll find the link to the penalties.
Yeah, we
can include it in the bio as well. I'll show you if you've not seen it. It's a brilliant.
Do you know what? I would never would have been able to pick it out, you know, of a crowd or of, you know, the name or anything. But I'm fairly sure that there was a video like that went viral, didn't it, yonks ago. But I'm fairly sure I've probably seen it if it is, because it was really famous. It was so cool.
Yeah, it's a really grainy video, actually, because it's so old.
Because it's so old. But it's one of those, isn't it? I mean, before we move on to the analytical half of the episode, if I've asked you your favourite, I've got to ask, can you remember the worst penalty that you've ever seen?
Do you know what? There's probably loads, and I bet there's loads of these on YouTube. And before I even answer, please, listeners, do send in what you think is the best and worst, because I bet there's loads that we've missed, and we could spend the whole episode doing that. I think you made a good point about the importance of the Pirlo goal as to why that was kind of one of the best ones. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'd say that one of the worst ones I've seen is as such is probably because it was such an important penalty. And it's the Andrei Shevchenko miss, which and I'm not just saying it as a Liverpool fan, obviously, but that 2005 penalty where he, as a striker, you know, he was in red hot form at that sort of stage of his career. He's sort of passed it kind of in the middle. It was almost between the left and the middle of the goal. It was a really weak penalty. It was a good height for the keeper. And he needed to score that goal to, I think it was just to keep them, well, it was to keep them in the final and keep the shootout going. And it was such a weak penalty. So for that reason, I say that was probably one of the worst ones because there was so much riding on it. And it was just an awfully taken penalty and for the quality of someone like Shevchenko.
And it's that thing again, though, if he'd have tried to absolutely blaze it, he might have been forgiven more than for just taking a really weak effort. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that certainly played into my opinion there as well. Yeah. But have you got one in mind for a worst penalty?
It's probably quite an obvious one, but it's probably the most embarrassing thing I've ever seen on a football pitch. It's when, do you remember ages ago, it was the Invincible side, and it was Thierry, you mentioned Henry before, it was Thierry Henry, and I think Pires was the one taking
it. Yeah,
do you remember when he
Man City,
ran up to the ball? I think they were only 1-0 up, which made it even worse. It was as if they were showing off at 7-0 or something. But I think Pires ran up to it and then tried to just be an absolute gobshite and sort of just roll it sideways for Henry to run onto. But he scuffed it with his stud. So the ball barely even moved out the spot. And then Henry sort of just ran past. He's, you know, he's completely missed the opportunity. They're both looking at each other like, you tool. And they both just missed it. And it was absolutely embarrassing. Again, we'll put that in the bio for anyone who hasn't seen.
Yeah, dude, that was another one as well where it was so unconventional that you were like, well, that must be retaken because something must have happened there, and it was just really odd. And I think they just booted it away. And then my memory of that is that Danny Mills, it was a hard knock anyway.
Yeah.
I think he was just in, I think he was in Pires' face or Henri's face, just basically calling them a disgrace
in
no uncertain terms, which, do you know what, is probably fair enough to have that audacity again. It's another example where if it comes off, it's great. I remember it was a penalty from Lionel Messi took the penalty, if I'm not mistaken, and did that same thing, passed it to Luis Suarez, who just slotted it. And again, the keeper, I think, stopped because he was like almost like, you can't do that. That's not allowed. And of course it was. And I think Suarez just had like a run-up that he had the edge on everyone else and just slotted it. And that it was great. It was genius when it's Messi and Suarez. And then obviously Pires and Henri, both at the top of their game at the time, they just had a shocker, didn't they? So for all that reason, yeah, that's got to be up there as well.
The moral of the story just has to be, if you're going to do it, make sure it comes off, else, yeah, you ain't getting away with that.
Back yourself, yeah. Right, Ryan, we've had our fun now. We've spoken about the fun part of penalties.
enough of that.
Exactly. You know what I want to do. I want to get into the hard, cold facts. I want to get into the analytics of penalties.
Yeah.
Now, I know in our notes that you've already coined this part of the segment, Penalytics.
And that's my only contribution to this segment.
How proud are you?
That's all I've got. How happy are you with that?
Right, yeah. Expected pride off the scales. Right, okay, fine. Well, I mean, before we get into, I know that we threatened to say about it before of what the fundamental question of what we want to know is where statistically is the best place to put a penalty.
Yes.
But before we do, I almost just want to give you something that I've just read that I found quite interesting in terms of a bit of research about penalties. Obviously, we're trying to answer this question, but I think it just, the point is, like anything really when you're looking at statistics, is that it's not black and white. It's very much dependent on so many other factors. And I found this study that basically said that the penalty success depends on the country that you're in. So they did a study that was over almost 1,800 penalties taken across a lot of the European domestic leagues over the past few years. And they factored in loads of different things, you know, the length of the run-up, the direction of the strike, the type of strike, what foot it was taken with, what the status of the match was at that time. So we've spoken before about game state, that sort of thing. The time period, so whether it's in the first minute, the last minute, whatever it might be. And obviously those things factor into the likelihood of the goal going in. If there's something, you know, if the game is on the line, then there might be more pressure, you know, all these different things. And they said that penalty takers in the Premier League aimed more centrally, whereas penalties were aimed more towards the bottom corners in La Liga in Spain.
All right.
Actually, in Spain, the Bundesliga, obviously Germany, and the Italian Serie A as well. So it's taken more centrally in the Premier League, which I thought was interesting. So there's just this what they've called internation variation between these different penalty types. So you know, in terms of answering the question on all of this, I guess I'm caveating it by saying that it depends, and we need to pay close attention to the fact that it depends between the different countries, the different leagues. And if you're moving from one league to another as a new signing, as a goalkeeper or a penalty taker, you need to maybe, you know, factor in what the new league is that you're going into, and how it differs from your old league. So just a bit of fun there. I thought that would be just something to throw in before we get down into the key question.
Quality.
So, yeah, as I say, the key question, of course, being where is the best place to put a penalty? Now, before I share what I've found or what research says, where do you think it would be the best place to put a penalty?
Ooh, okay. Considering I've never taken one properly.
Yeah.
I would say the best place to put it is one of the bottom corners, probably. Because I'm guessing that, you know, it's all about the time that the keeper has to get across that level of distance. So if it's right in the corner, not only have they got to get across, they've also got to get low as well, haven't they? So I'd say that's probably slightly harder for them to do than to reach up. Because I guess if they're jumping, they're already on the way up, aren't they? If that makes sense, rather than having to get down. It might be absolutely, totally wrong, but that would be my answer.
Yeah, no, that's well explained. And they'd say in commentary, don't they? They say like it was a good height for the keeper, which probably goes along with the fact that they are almost diving, well, across, and by the time they get across, it's perfectly with the height that they're at. So no, that completely makes sense, and it's not wrong per se. It's just the research that I found, it kind of ties into essentially where keepers are most likely to dive for a penalty, and then kind of reverse engineering it to put it where you know that they're least likely to go, if that makes sense. So knowing that the keeper is going to go more often than not, let's say, down to their left, you know then to not put it down to their left. You put
it. So we're talking about doing our homework again here, are we?
Yeah, I guess so. I suppose so, yeah. And obviously, looking at it from a research perspective, as I've found some here, on mass, you know, across a wider sample, to see where, more often than not, where keepers tend to go, and then as the penalty taker, you know, okay, to go there or to not go there. I'm flirting with the idea of actually telling you, but what I'll do is just share what I found.
Yeah.
And it was a recent bit of research which looked at, now this is the caveat as well, it looked at penalty shootouts, so not necessarily penalties taken in, you know, in league
games. Yeah, within the league or mid-game, yeah.
Yeah, but still really interesting. And it looked at penalty shootouts from the World Cup and the European Championships, so the Euros, obviously, from 1976 to 2016. So a wide sample size, but of course there's still fewer games because it's only every 4 years, of course. And essentially what they found was that goalkeepers only remained in the centre of the goal 3% of the time. 3% of the time. So they were more likely to obviously go left or right. And this comes back to what we said before, like goalkeepers don't want to be seen to be doing nothing, because then it shows, it can embarrass them very easily. So almost always they are likely to dive to their left or right, or show some sort of signal to go left or right. So
yeah.
I think that obviously plays into the fact that there's more and more penalties that go down the middle now for that reason. And you see Harry Kane, I spoke about him before, but I've seen him on multiple occasions almost pass it with a bit of pace, just right down the middle with a bit of height as well, knowing that it's going to go, the minute the keeper commits themselves, enough height is just going to get them there. And, you know, he probably has done his homework in more of a broader sense of what happens. So, yeah, goalkeepers, they only remain in the centre of the goal 3% of the time. Now, of course, if they do remain in the centre somewhat, obviously their legs can still cover the middle of the goal if they were to dive left or right.
Yeah.
So for that reason, if you almost split the goal into six, bottom left, top left, bottom middle, top middle, bottom right, top right. Are you with me?
Yeah, I've got you.
Six.
Yeah. I was literally moving my eyes along the goal as you were saying that.
Yeah, I mean, that was hard for me to even just get out. But imagine that don't get me wrong, you put it in the top corner, then you've got a really high success rate. But then, as you say, the keeper might also go left or right. So there's that element that they might actually just guess at least the right half of the goal or the right third of the goal in this example. So as I say, they rarely stay in the middle. So for that reason, going in the top middle section of the goal is the most lucrative place to put your penalty. Whether or not you can execute that is obviously another story.
Never would have said that in a million years.
Yeah.
If anything, that's where I thought would be not very good, because as you say, if the keeper just sort of stands still, that's straight into their hands. But as you say, they statistically in this research just don't stay in the middle. So
exactly. Yeah. So it's playing up to that. And do you know what that means? Do more Panenkas, because it genuinely, statistically, is if you do it right, as we keep saying, if you do it right, that actually is the best place to put it. But then it's obviously the pace comes into it, all those sorts of things as well. So if you put a bit of pace on it in the middle of the goal, as you know, we have seen more and more penalty takers do, that is, as I say, driven by the numbers, the best place to put your penalty.
This could go round and round and round, because I absolutely, totally agree and love it, but immediately I'm just visualising me taking a penalty and chipping it straight into the keeper's arms. But that's the beauty of this chat, that, you know, we could keep going, basically. But yeah, that's really interesting. I never would have said in a million years, statistically, going top middle was the best.
Exactly. And obviously flipping on its head, where for the keeper is the best place to, like, how do you best save a penalty? In theory, it's to do nothing at all, as we've spoken about, is to
mad
try and, yeah, just stay big and to, yeah, as I say, there's so many other factors as to why it may or may not be the best place, but it's just driven by the sample size that we've gone by. But an interesting one, I think.
Obviously, you know, all the Premier League managers listen to the Football Fanalytics podcast. So next season, when penalties are coming in right, left and centre because of VAR, and we see all the goalkeepers just standing in the middle, arms wide open, not moving, you're going to know, mate, that they've listened to the second half of this episode. And they'll be like, Mark Carey says, stay strong, stay in the middle.
Stay strong, stay in the middle. Yeah,
stand firm.
It's funny, though. Obviously, a lot of the episodes that we've done previously where it's been on a certain topic, I do look out for the things that we talk about a little bit more than in the subsequent game. So I'm going to look out for a little bit more just to see what the keeper's techniques are in the games. You know, it's nothing new that I'm explaining here. It's obviously driven by research that's already out there. But yeah, a fun one. And we eventually came to the answer that is
quality,
the best
mate.
Place.
Bravo. Love that.
So there you have it. Yeah, it wouldn't be a Fanalytics episode if there wasn't numbers to be spoken about. So thank you, as always, for indulging me there, Ryan. And thank you, everyone, for listening. I think that brings us to a close. This is an episode which, you know, we really encourage people to get in contact and share what they think as the best penalties they've seen, the worst penalties they've seen, their penalty of choice, how would they approach it, and, you know, any other things that they've found themselves. So please get in contact, everyone. And that was my segue into saying that you know how to do this now, hopefully. You can contact us, of course, at fanalytics.pod@gmail.com. Yeah, I'm getting a dab hand at this. Or at fanalyticspod on Twitter and Instagram. Yeah, please do get in contact with us. We always love hearing from you. And yeah, let's wrap it up there. Enjoy the rest of your week, everybody, and we will see you next time.
Podcast Network.